Look.
From 90.7 WFAE Charlotte, it's Charlotte Talks. Sitting in for Mike Collins, I'm Chris Clackham. We all know the food we end up buying at most any major retail grocery store has likely been shipped halfway across the country and in the process loses a lot of its nutritional value in transit. For example, those green beans you see in the grocery store were likely picked, on average, 6 days ago and have already lost about 50% of their nutritional value. So what's the alternative? Our panelists today would say emphatically, eat local. Aaron Newton is co-author of A Nation of Farmers. Mr. Newton is a writer and incubator farm participant in Cabarrus County, where he lives and gardens with his wife, two daughters, and a cadre of fairly content animals. He writes about the changing state of the world at Powering Down and Groovy Green. Aaron, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Christy Shy founded Know Your Farms with her brother, Wes Shy, in 2008. Know Your Farms works with farmers in the area to market their product and access the Charlotte consumer market. Each week, Know Your Farms picks up food items from the farms in the Charlotte area, delivers it to customers in the city. And in addition to food system work, Christy serves on the Town of Davidson Planning Board and is a freelance technology trainer and instructional designer. Christy, good to see you as well.
Thank you.
Dr. Michael Smith is a naturopathic physician, trained as a primary care doctor with expertise in natural medicine. He's the founder of Carolina's Natural Health Center, the leading holistic wellness center of the Carolinas, currently the president of the North Carolina Association of Naturopathic Physicians. He is actively working towards licensing naturopathic doctors in the state of North Carolina. Dr. Smith, good to see you.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Okay, Aaron, let's start with you. What's the problem with what we eat?
Well, it's not meeting our nutritional needs. It's not serving our local economies. And the way that we produce food is unsustainable.
How so? What do you mean by that?
We're facing several problems when you take a look at industrial agriculture. Enormous soil loss. We're degrading water and depleting ancient aquifers at rates that they cannot replenish themselves. We are facing changing climate that makes weather patterns unpredictable, which makes it harder to grow food. And probably the scariest of all of these problems is our enormous dependency on fossil fuel energy. Roughly 10 calories of fossil fuel energy required to produce just a single calorie of food. And as we wane in our ability to produce more petroleum and natural gas, we're going to face increasing problems with sustaining industrial agriculture.
You wrote the book, co-authored the book with Sharon Astick, who lives in upstate New York.
She does, central New York.
And A Nation of Farmers. You're advocating what in here?
We call for 100 million new farmers in America to address the production problems that we're beginning to face. And also we call for 200 million new cooks. We spend a lot of time in the book making the connection between the way that we eat, the way that we cook, and the food and how it's grown. We cannot change just the way that we grow food without addressing our diet, the way we prepare food, and what we eat.
What is the food crisis, Christy Shy?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wide-ranging, is it not?
Yes, it is, and it's quite diverse. I think one of the biggest things that I'm finding is that there's just a real disconnect between what we think is happening in our minds with regard to where our food comes from and what the reality actually is. We were talking about this a little while ago this morning about how when we go into the grocery store and we think about the lettuce that we might get, even if we're buying organic, maybe it's Earthbound Organics, we're buying this food and we're thinking maybe at some level there's a person behind it. But in reality, there's a big piece of equipment with a laser that's running across a field and is vacuum sucking these leaves into a bag that then gets washed. And it's, I think that we make choices based on assumptions because we're not really thinking about what's really happened with our food system.
And do we also, along those same lines, assume that just because something looks good, that it's good for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, most of the produce that we see in the grocery stores today is actually been has a lot of market research behind it in terms of what do people, they shop with their eyes, not necessarily with their taste. And some of the best food that I have, in fact, the ugliest food I have is the best food that I have.
Well, so. You can say, definitely say that about peaches and about a lot of fruit, especially. Dr. Smith, is the food that we're eating really making us sick, though?
It certainly can be. You know, food that we eat has the biggest impact on our health. It's going to determine what's going to happen in our bodies. I mean, there's no more powerful medicine than the foods that we put into us. And every time we sit down to eat, we're making choices. And we're either choosing to invest in our health or choosing to subsidize our illness. And that's the real problem and challenge that we have. And definitely I promote with my patients in eating lots of fruits and vegetables. And the main thing I want them to understand and get is that we need to be thinking locally and be buying locally because of the nutrient content in the foods that you're choosing from a local farmer. It's going to be way more than something that was picked in California a couple weeks ago and shipped 3,000 miles.
I explained Christy Shy about exactly how Know Your Farms operates. It's what's called a CSA. It's an extension of a CSA, a community supported agriculture program, where a bunch of people get together and decide to support a local farmer by subscribing to his farm, so to speak. Tell us how that works, a CSA.
Well, CSA, there are many different flavors. The notion of CSA was developed in Switzerland and Japan back in the 60s, maybe the 50s, and it came to the United States in the 70s as a way of trying to get more economic value to the farmer and also giving more economic value in return to the customer. And the way it works is that customers agree in advance of the growing season to purchase food from that farmer on a regular basis. And in exchange for providing that commitment up front, which often includes a financial commitment, the farmer is then going to return a share of what he grows during the season. And so for us, each week with the CSA we run, each family gets a box of produce each week. And what's in that box is determined by the farmer. And this kind of ties in with what Mike was saying about nutrition. Because we're eating seasonally, we're getting the food at its ripest point, which is when it has its most nutritional content. And the food we're getting, we had people picking up yesterday, and I was talking with them as they were picking up their food, and they said, so when was this harvested? And I said, about 7 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to be eating food that night that was came out of the fields that morning.
And you cannot overemphasize enough, Aaron, feel free to weigh in on this. The freshness of food is also a big determining factor in its nutritional value because it loses nutritional value as the days go by.
Absolutely. And it also tastes better. I mean, we started off talking about some of the scary reasons why we really need to change the way we grow food and what we eat. But at the end of the day, that fear is not going to sustain a movement, a revolution in agriculture and in eating in America. But it doesn't have to because this food tastes better. We're talking about a change that not only is better for us, but also is just more enjoyable.
Before we get too far away from it, though, Christy, I would like for you to address this whole issue of what's important about me knowing the person who is growing my vegetables?
Well, there's several reasons. One is that it's a community building piece, and that in and of itself is a worthy cause. But I would say it gets to some extent to what Mike was saying about the nutritional value of the food, in that and actually what Aaron was saying too about the soils being depleted and mm-hmm. perhaps about the practices that the farmer uses. The way in which the farmer raises the food affect the nutritional value of the food, and the varieties that the farmer grows affect nutritional value. And if you have a relationship with your farmer, then you can influence what he chooses to grow. And so you actually have some control over the types of food that you're getting if you're not going to grow it yourself. And so for me, that's a big piece of it. I think also, personally, having the relationships with the farmers that I have been able to establish has helped me realize how important this issue is. And it's helped me shift out of a mindset where I wasn't thinking about where my food came from. And the more I realize where my food is coming from, the more I don't want to participate in that system.
Mm.
And I want to look for something that's different, that gives me a way to connect with somebody in my community.
Aaron, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I did. I wanted to go back and make a comment about something Chrissy said. You, if you look at the varieties of tomatoes, for instance, that are grown in the United States right now, we're growing about 10% of the varieties that were available around the turn of last century, around 1900. Only about 10%. The other 90% have not survived. We have bred these vegetables to be able to be shipped long distances, handle mechanical harvesting, and sit on store shelves for long periods of time, not for taste and flavor. So what you're doing when you're supporting local farmers is you're giving them the ability to grow better tasting varieties that they can bring to market that don't have to endure that longer shipping. So we're actually increasing the variety of food that's available, not decreasing it by returning to local food.
All right, let me play the devil's advocate with Dr. Smith here. Aaron used the example of tomatoes. Mm-hmm. My understanding is, I just learned this over the weekend, that tomato is one of the vegetables slash fruit that does not lose its nutritional value the longer it sits on the shelf.
Where did you learn that from?
I obviously from somebody who had no idea what they were talking about based on your reaction to that.
Yeah, no, the moment it's picked, it starts to lose nutritional value.
Oh, my goodness.
I think that was the Tomato Marketing Association public study.
Yeah, but this is important. You know, when we talk about variety, I talk about variety of fruits and vegetables with my patients because, you know, we now only eat a few different foods. You know, mostly corn, soy, and wheat.
Mm.
And we're so limited in the variety of nutrients that we're getting, and we need to begin to increase that.
There's a real paradox here that we're talking about food, as you point out in some things that you have written, Dr. Smith. People are very focused on food making us sick. Okay? That's what we're talking about here today. But perhaps the focus should be on the fact that food can actually make us well.
Yes.
The healing elements of food is what you advocate, Dr. Smith.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. When I work with my patients, you know, the very first place we look to is what are they eating? Because, you know, there's no more powerful medicine that we have than what we put into our bodies and the food that we eat. If you think about it, we are literally flooding our body with nutrients 3 times a day. You know, and you could contrast that with the ability of a little medicine in a little pill and what it can do in your bodies. You know, there's a huge difference in the value of the nutrients that we eat. It gives us the health that we want. And so we get to choose every time we sit down, you know, are we going to be putting foods into us that is going to be adding to our health, or are we going to be putting foods into us that are going to be taking away?
Aaron?
Chris, and to follow up on that, very often people talk about the expense, the added expense in buying local or buying organic. And I'd like to point out that in 1950, we were spending about 20% of our household income on food and about 8% on health care. And those numbers now have reversed, so that now we spend about 8 to 10% of our household income on food and about 20% on health care. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but one of them is what Mike's talking about, which is the fact that you can't view those numbers in a vacuum, that you're going to pay for it one way or another. And so we suggest paying for it up front by buying better, more nutritional local foods.
Quickly, Aaron, this is a recent phenomenon, is it not, the disappearance of the local farmer? Is it a relatively recent phenomenon?
Well, we've been bashing farm culture and rural culture for a long time, actually. We told farmers in the 50s to get big or get out. And a lot of them have had to get out. They haven't been able to.
Aaron Newton is co-author of A Nation of Farmers. Christy Shy is with us. She is the head of Know Your Farms. And Dr. Michael Smith from the Carolinas Natural Health Center. We're back with more of Charlotte Talks right after this.
Charlotte Talks today made possible in part by Salem Enterprises, a general contractor specializing in commercial interiors for small and medium-sized businesses, upfits, renovations, and remodeling. Details at salementerprises.com. Coming up on this program tomorrow, we'll take a look back at the 1967 attack on the USS Liberty by the Israeli Defense Force and the investigation that followed. We'll talk about survivor accounts of the attack, what happened in the aftermath, and about why the United States and Israeli officials worked to de-emphasize the attack. That's all tomorrow with guest host Chris Clackham when Charlotte Talks, 9 a.m. on 90.7 WFAE. You can call the program today with questions or comments, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 1-800-603-9323, or email us at wfae.charlottetalks.org.
More than 150 people have died as ethnic tensions rise in western China. What's behind the violence and the challenge it presents to China's leadership? The Diane Rehm Show, Thursday.
That's the Diane Rehm Show each weekday morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on your NPR news source, 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded radio.
We're back on Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our discussion today is about eating local, visiting your local farmers markets, getting involved in backyard gardening yourself. You are advocating that, are you not, Aaron?
Absolutely. We talk about the bullseye diet as a way to think about where your food comes from. That center bullseye being home food production. How much can you produce yourself? In 1943, we were producing about 44% of the vegetables consumed on the home front here in America were grown in Victory Gardens in our front and backyards.
Oh, my goodness.
And then that so if you can't grow it yourself, that next ring of the bullseye is community and neighborhood production, what you can grow in community gardens, in your elderly neighbor's backyard, in schoolyards near where you live. That next ring out is the district ring, and this is supporting local farmers and farmers markets and CSAs. A regional ring, food that you might not eat as often but comes from a little further away, maybe the mountains and the coast for us here. And then a fair trade ring that sort of rounds out this bullseye. But the idea is always that closer to home is better.
It's going to be, Christy alluded to a few moments ago, it's going to be picked a few hours ago as opposed to a few days ago. Better chance of it being picked that way.
If you've never started the water boiling for your corn before you've picked it, you've not really ever eaten sweet corn.
Before we broke away on the break, Christy, you wanted to make a point. I had raised the issue about it being the disappearance of the local farms really being a recent phenomena of the last 30 years or so. You may even be willing to go back further than that, but you wanted to make an additional point on that.
Yeah, it's not just the loss of farms. I see with the work in planning that we're losing farmland, and in fact, in North Carolina, between 2002 and 2007, we lost 600,000 acres of farmland to development. So we are certainly losing farmland at an astonishing rate. But in addition to that, we are also losing farmers. And Aaron is participating in the incubator farm, which is a farm to grow new farmers up in Cabarrus County. But if we look at the reason why the loss of farmers is such an issue is the average age of farmers in North Carolina is 59. A third of our farmers are over the age of 65. Mm. I went to speak to a group of vegetable producers up in Lincolnton County, and I felt like I had walked into a nursing home facility. There were more hearing aids and walking sticks than I expected. And in a room full of people, there were only two people that were under the age of 50.
This is going to be a perfect place to bring in someone, Aaron, that you know very, very well, Matthew Quint Redman. He is the co-owner of the TSR Group out of Colorado, I think. And basically, Quint, you've spent 15 years of professional experience in design, planning, natural resources, spatial technologies. You guys have come up with something that you refer to as agroburbia. You're actually talking about developing residential areas around farms that supply the people who live in those residences with homegrown vegetables. Can you expand on that, please? Thanks
sure.
for joining us, by the way.
Oh, very good. Well, it's privilege, and thank you for the opportunity. Aaron and Sharon have written a brilliant book, and what's been interesting for us over those same years that they were researching that book is how do we actually get 30 million new farmers to work in this country? It's both a training issue, as Christy was talking about, but it's also a physical issue. How do we get the infrastructure for those people to participate, to learn, and have an opportunity in a market? So about 6 or 7 years ago, we actually started in earnest really figuring out how you meld both the real estate development world and the agricultural world and how you actually make them support each other. So we actually design subdivisions where the community and the subdivision actually provides the underpinnings, the irrigation, the market, the marketplace, labor for the farmer and the farming community to actually make a living, a good living, actually. It's pretty interesting. Once you get away from the idea that there are separate issues, living with your food is a pretty good idea, and it makes economic sense as well.
It's not that far-fetched when you consider that people move into country clubs mm-hmm. to be members of the tennis club or a golf course or whatever the case may be. In this regard, I take it, Quint, that you're advocating that they become members of the farm.
Absolutely. And in fact, like I say, it's a great opportunity. Food becomes a preeminent part of their life, just like this applies to all ages. I think Aaron would agree with me here that it's for kids mm-hmm. all the way through. And we have townhomes in some of the developments that we're doing. We have one that's just coming up near Kannapolis as well that will have townhomes in it. So you can actually move there. You don't even have to own the piece of land, but you can actively go out on a regular basis and help the farmer with labor, help the farmer with expertise, and then it goes through the entire food process. Those folks that have that experience, that gray hair experience, can teach the younger people how to can, how to do all kinds of things that we have kind of left behind. But believe it or not, around the country, and we're working in almost all sectors of the company of the country, there is a groundswell of interest in this. This is not... I'm not sure I agree with 100 million farmers, but certainly yeah. there are 30 million people out there that want to participate in a much, much closer way with their whole agricultural supply chain.
Okay, and Aaron lives on one of your projects, or it's underway in the Harrisburg area, Aaron?
Quentin is working on a project here in the Charlotte area, and they're pretty far along. There's another project that I've been helping with the planning on that's moving through permitting in Harrisburg. The community is called Bloom, Bob Taylor, Taylor Properties, that would include 12 acres set aside for active agricultural production, as well as community gardens and ready-to-go backyard gardens when you move into your home.
Very good. Quint, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
And good luck to you. Put in a plug for the town of Matthews. Has some common space available. Highway 51 right there at Monroe Road. And there's a
community garden right there where people can have their own little plot of land and be growing their own vegetables.
There is. Okay, Christy, you wanted to make a point
there.
Yeah,
I was just going to say that I think that we shouldn't underestimate people's desire to get out and put their hands in the dirt. And it is kids, but it's also adults. We offer through our local food club, we offer the ability for our members to get a discounted rate by performing work on farms. And we take people out to the farms to do on-farm projects. And it never fails that the people who go out, the investment bankers and the Duke Energy employees, it never fails. They come back thanking the farmer for having let them come out to work.
If you want to join our discussion today with our panelists, then include Christy Shy, founder of Know Your Farms. Aaron Newton is co-author of the book, A Nation of Farmers, and Dr. Michael Smith is the founder and president of Carolina's Natural Health Center. We're talking about the importance of eating local around here. Let's go to the phone line. Phone numbers are 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323 or 1-800-603-9323. CharlotteTalks@WFAE.org is our email address, and we can go to Robin, who has been holding for a while in Mint Hill. Robin, thanks for calling in.
Hi, I was very excited to hear about this program.
As was I.
And to find out that Aaron Newton was saying that I'm reading A Nation of Farmers, in fact, started it last week. Been growing heirlooms for a few years, getting involved, just on a small level. But my question to the panel is, how do you spread the word? I get excited about this. I start talking to people about it, saying, you got to rip up these lawns. We're chemically treating, everything. We're wasting our pesticides, our water. Look at this food, how much better it is. And you just get these blank stares.
Yeah.
But how is it we convince people to change their ways?
And that's a major undertaking, right, Christy?
Yeah, well, we're seeing amazing changes happen in Cabarrus County and in the town of Davidson, where I live. And a lot of that started by feeding the people in power. In Cabarrus County, they brought the county commissioners in and fed them a local meal and said, if we don't do something differently, this food is going to be gone. And in Davidson, I did the same thing with our town board and trying to help them understand that there is the option to have this food. And I do this at our house. We have people over all the time, and we specifically say, this is who grew this, and this is who grew this, mm-hmm. and this is who grew this. And so I think it can start just by doing small things. But there are also organizations in the area you can get tied into, Slow Food Charlotte, Slow Food Carolina Piedmont Region. Those are both areas that try to do potlucks and things where people are preparing food that include local ingredients. And they have a social aspect to it, and that's one way to get people involved.
How practical is the concept of a neighborhood farm cooperative? A neighborhood garden cooperative. If I grow the squash and tomatoes, somebody else will share with me their corn and beans or whatever the case may be. I mean, what about an idea like that?
There are books out there showing studies. I have a book at my house I'm reading right now called Food, Not Lawns. And it's actually a toolkit guide for how to have communities do exactly that, food shed planning for neighborhoods.
Robin, what were your heirlooms? Tomatoes?
Yes, in fact, I'm canning some this morning.
Okay, have you gone to the books or online, figure out how to share those seeds once the season is over with?
Absolutely. In fact, I've got one out in the yard now. I mean, we're just, you know, doing this on an acre that is, as far as we can tell, one of the last ones. So it's under a net. We're going to harvest those seeds and try to share them with a seed bank that's an online venture by some tomato fanatics. But, you know, my family has just learned the difference. As she was saying, when you start cooking, my sons are all into this now. And I think that if people would just, you know, tear up a little bit of those manicured lawns and plant some vegetables, they would be amazed. Plus, visit the local farms. You know,
yeah. Local farms and the farmers markets, of which they are sprouting up everywhere. I understand that Mint Hill now has, you've got a new farmers market happening out there.
Mint Hill has one. It's been starting up the past few years.
Ballantyne area has got one now on Tuesdays, I think. The Matthews Farmers Market goes on Saturday mornings, and you better get there earlier. Robin, thanks so much for the phone call. Christy, you are making a point.
Thank you.
Thea, take care. You were making a point earlier. We're talking an awful lot about farming and growing your own, but you also want to emphasize how to cook it.
Yeah, one of the barriers that we've got for a lot of people is not knowing how to prepare it. And this again gets back to not necessarily knowing how the food is grown or knowing what's in season. We had chickens available, and they came whole, not as breasts or legs. And we had people who were really active in purchasing food from local farms shy away from this opportunity, which I was really surprised by because it was our first chance to get chicken that year. And I inquired, and it was because they didn't know how to fabricate or disassemble the bird or how to cook it.
Okay.
We spend a lot of time in the book, Chris, talking about this problem, that we can grow all the local food we want, but if we can't help people to understand what to do with that food, then we're not going to be successful. So we even include recipes in the book. We think it's very important that we change not only the way we grow food, but what we're eating and how we're preparing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is so important because, you know, one of the things in our society and culture is that we are so addicted to sweet through our processed foods and through the corn syrup that's in so many things. You know, we are just tasting sweet all the time. And when you give people a meal that is not sweet, they can't appreciate the different tastes and flavors that are there. And in your food, in your fruits and vegetables, if you can retrain your taste buds, which you can by taking those sweets out of the diet and starting to eat real food again, you'll be amazed at how good the food tastes.
Are we talking about here advocating some drastic and dramatic changes, though, in our diets, Dr. Smith?
It may be for some people. Absolutely. You know, too many of us are consuming foods that come in a box, that come in a package, that are processed, that are primarily made from soy and corn, and have very little variety. They're high in sugars, high in salts, and they are causing many of the health problems in this country.
And I think that the scale of the change that we're talking about is grand, but I actually advocate for more rapid change, because I think one of our problems is we take baby steps and we aren't able to recognize the full benefits and retrain our taste buds fast enough. It's much more successful, I think, if you jump in with both feet, challenge yourself to eat locally as much as possible, that you're going to be much more successful making that change.
Okay, a practical issue here. How do you do that with grains and breads? How do you eat local with grains and breads?
You buy from Anson Mills.
Preceding paid for by yeah. Anson Mills.
Yeah. No, you join our food club.
Yeah.
And we do have grains here. I mean, the Carolinas, we're growing rice. That's historical agriculture practice here. Carolina Gold rice is one of the heirloom grains that's actually on the Slow Food Arc of Taste as marked for extinction if we don't continue to buy it and continue to grow it. But we do have access to grains here. In fact, Carolina Farm Stewardship Association is backing an organic grain production initiative here in the state of North Carolina, where they're training farmers and building that back up. So, I mean, there is a lot of headway, but it takes having a market that is willing to step up and be there demanding these items.
Trade the box of processed cereal for a bag of homegrown grain.
Or
locally grown grain, I should say.
Maybe, I don't know, eat an ear of corn for breakfast.
Yeah, and examine your staples. I mean, what's wrong with potatoes?
What do we do outside of the growing season?
Well, we can extend our growing season. We have a very long growing season, but also we're talking about cooking with these foods. But we also need to talk about how to preserve these foods.
Preserve them.
Absolutely. And we've lost a lot of that knowledge. So that's another knowledge base that we want to tap into that some older folks still have. So I know that the classes that the Cabarrus County Extension Office offered on preserving food sold out. They added classes, and those classes sold out as well. So there are people interested in doing that work again.
Chris from Charlotte writes in and says it also takes up very little space to actually grow a garden. He and his 8-year-old son have a 30-by-30-foot garden in his yard. They get to pick out the seeds. They sprout them in cups in late winter, prepare the garden, plant it in spring, maintain it throughout the summer. Not only is it a good father-son project, mother-daughter project, but it teaches him how much work actually goes into producing food. We're looking into setting up a community garden for his Cub Scout. That's music to your ears, I take it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. My 2-year-old daughter last year grew better pumpkins than I ever had. And then we processed them. We turned them into baby food that we froze, and then that's how she helped feed her younger sister. And so she was beginning to understand the full process of how to grow food, what to do with it, and how to share it with your family.
And as another practical matter, getting back to how do you eat local when you're talking about meats, for example.
Okay, well, see, I wanted to say I eat a local diet year-round. So, and it doesn't require preserving
you
food.
You eat seasonally.
I eat seasonally.
Okay.
Absolutely. And what that means for me is that as one person, it's much easier to do right now. For groups of people, it's a little bit harder because the farmers have to know in advance to plant that food. And often people don't think about it till it's too late.
Christy Shias with Know Your Farms, Aaron Newton co-authored A Nation of Farmers, and Dr. Michael Smith is the founder and president of the Carolinas Natural Health Center. We're back with more of Charlotte Talks after this.
Charlotte Talks today made possible in part by Brothers Air Heat and Plumbing, with over 30 years experience taking care of area homeowners. Just ask your neighbor. Brothers Air Heat and Plumbing at 877-713-HVAC or brotherair.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, a look at ethnic tensions in China. More than 150 people have died as ethnic tensions rise in Western China. A panel joins Diane to discuss what's behind the violence and the challenge it presents to Chinese leadership. Shai Oster, correspondent for the Wall Street Journal, John Pomfret, editor, Washington Post Outlook section, and Nuri Turkle, attorney and past president of the Uyghur American Association, join Diane at 10 o'clock. You can join us with questions or comments this hour at 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 1-800-603-9323, or at charlottetalks@wfae.org.
I'm Chet Riley. I listen to NPR because I really, really like the way they treat the news. I like the diversity. It's not sensationalized. It's not a hype. It's the straight news and the straight facts. It's current, and it's done very, very well. NPR is my source every morning.
Let NPR's Morning Edition help you understand the whole story. Weekdays from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
There's a meat problem.
We are back on Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins, and we're talking about the effective ways to keep deer out of your backyard garden. And it involves, well, we just won't go into that. We're talking today with some local folks. Christy Shy runs what's called Know Your Farms, a local food club, first in Davidson, now elsewhere in Mecklenburg County. Aaron Newton is a farmer up in Cabarrus County, and he co-authored a book, A Nation of Farmers, with Sharon Astick. And then Dr. Michael Smith is the founder and president of the Carolinas Natural Health Center. So how do you keep deer out of your garden? Maybe we should go into that, because there's a huge deer problem in this.
Well, you can plant deer-resistant things, first
yeah.
of all.
Yeah.
Well, and multiple strategies. So, yeah. You can use human hair you may get from your barber after you get your hair cut.
Soap?
Dog hair, soap.
Balloons yeah. that you move yeah. So that you sort of train the deer not to come into your yard.
Anything that can make noise, for example?
Absolutely. Or CDs that throw off crazy when the sun strikes them.
Right.
Or
okay.
talk to your local deer hunters.
Well, there are a lot of things out there, and we could go on and on and on about that. There is an issue of convenience, about people saying they don't have enough time to grow the garden. Aaron.
Well, absolutely. And that's one of the big yes. Well, I'll tell you how we address that in my family is we got rid of our television. 4 years ago, we just put it out at the curb with a sign that this TV works, and it was gone in 20 minutes, and we have never looked back.
So, yeah.
That's certainly not a decision that every family is going to make, but the average American spends about 3 hours a day watching television. So I'm not suggesting that you get rid of your television. Just cut back to 2 episodes of Law and Order instead of 3 and use that extra hour, so now you have 7 hours a week, and that's plenty of time to grow a really great garden.
Christy?
Well, I was going to say that the convenience and time factor often come in the cooking side of things as well. So you might go to the farmer's market, but you may not know which things to purchase or how am I going to put those things together. And people tend to go to grocery stores with a shopping list in hand. They've already defined what they're going to get before they go. And when you go to a farmer's market or when you buy through a CSA, you know, you're having to shift your model around to, I'm going to take what I get and I'm going to have an adventure with it and figure out how to cook it. But for people that don't have, we find some people still don't have time or interest to do that. And so we're actually getting ready to roll out a program with Know Your Farms called a Meal in a Box, where we have a chef that is putting together. We talk to the chef, here's what's coming out of the farms this week, and she writes the recipes, and she plays Iron Chef and wants to have them done in 20 minutes, and you know, but there are ways out there, and I think it starts to illustrate another piece of this puzzle, is that we've gotten to where we are because we have more people in the labor force now than we did before. There isn't somebody at home to prepare the food or to grow the food, and so the food industry has accommodated those trends by creating the processed food and the prepared foods. And that's a great thing. When we try to come back to doing local food, if we don't have some other support mechanism to help people transition, then it's really hard for people to jump in with both feet. I agree that you should,
yeah.
but it's hard.
And that support's very, very important. I run a CSA with two partners, Brad Hinckley and Eric Williamson, called Coldwater Creek Farms. And what we found is that one of the most important components of that CSA is providing recipes. You know, what do I do with all this squash that you're sending me?
Yeah.
And so to sort of help them to know what to do with it is a huge piece of the puzzle.
Well, before we get too far away from it, I want to mention the fact you used the term again, CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. It's a subscription program. You have shareholders, people who buy into the local farm. And then 18 to 22 weeks out of the year, they get a box of fresh vegetables every single week. If you want
year round.
Year round.
We do year round.
She's year round.
Oh, Know Your Farms is year round. If you want to know about a CSA in your area, ncfarmfresh.com is one place to go. That's the state agriculture website, ncfarmfresh.com. Localharvest.org is another spot you can go online. Now, talk about a little bit more, Dr. Smith, if you will, about food preparation, making sure that you're getting the maximum benefit out of this fresh food that you have labored months over.
Yes, and patients are, the first thing that they start asking me is, well, how do I do this? How do I cook these vegetables? What do I do with them when I get them home? And, you know, oftentimes looking for recipes, which are great to have. But for us, it's often just very simple in just putting a little water in the bottom of the pan, putting a cover on it and steaming it for a few minutes until it kind of increases in the color. But you still have the crispness of the vegetable there. And so you're retaining most of the nutrient value. And then oftentimes, especially in your darker color vegetables, I'll retain the juice, the liquid that's left over, and drink that.
Wow.
There's still nutrients in there.
Oh, Christy, you were talking a few minutes ago about eating year-round and offering year-round.
Mm-hmm.
Bill writes in on our blog that we need more greenhouses and hoop houses. Could you address that?
Sure. That's part of what Aaron was referring to when he said season extension. There used to be a lot of greenhouses in this area, and as the global food system emerged, our local food system devolved, and so a lot of the greenhouses that were here are now gone. So we're looking at going back to things that we had in place. But I will say that we need to think about those things as season extension and not trying to create or grow things in the season in which they're not intended to grow. Mm. For example, tomatoes, when they're grown in the greenhouse, the production costs are three times that when they're grown in the fields. And so if you are wanting to have accessible and affordable local food, then you really still need to eat seasonally, which means learning to like things like kale or collard greens or things that you might not
when you say greenhouse, I envision this big Quonset hut about a football field long, or at least a half a football field long. That's what I envision. You can have a small greenhouse, can you not?
Absolutely.
Okay. Tom in York, South Carolina, is holding on the phone, and I just want to raise the issue at this point that he is likely to raise, and that is, do you have zoning problems when it comes to wanting to build a backyard garden and or greenhouse?
Oh, absolutely. Right now, I'm actually working with the city of Concord to write a text amendment that would allow chickens to be kept within the city limits. We're not talking roosters, and we're talking small flocks.
Yeah.
But the fact that we can't begin to introduce reasonable animals and be allowed to produce vegetables within the ordinances, that's something that needs to be addressed.
Let's go to the phone lines. Martin in Union County. Martin, thanks so much for holding.
Hey there.
Hey there.
I am just curious if you guys are influenced by Wendell Berry. I was reading Wendell Berry this morning. And also, is there anything going on out here in Union County with some of these opportunities, especially for kids to go do things?
There are an awful lot of poultry operations in Union County.
Wendell Berry is one of my heroes, and we quote him and rely on him. We stood on his shoulders in writing the book. So I have great admiration for Wendell Berry.
Anybody know of anything going on in Union County? In what regard, Martin?
Well, I've got a couple of teenage sons. One of them got laid off from a job recently, and I'm thinking, wow, this might be some opportunity.
An excellent opportunity to go out there and learn what it takes about farming and growing
right.
food.
Yeah. Martin, if you contact us through our website, knowyourfarms.com, I can put you in touch with some people. I don't have their contact information with me, but...
There is an incubator farm?
There is, and that's part of that program that
in
I'm...
In Union County.
Not in Union County, but this is a program that we're hoping to spread to other counties throughout North Carolina. We have one in Orange County, in the Elma C. Lomax Incubator Farm Park in Cabarrus County. We're hoping that other counties will replicate that program to train new farmers.
And I'm sorry, Christy, go ahead again. He should contact...
He can contact info@knowyourfarms.com, and I'll put him in touch with the contacts that I have in that county.
And we're going to put everything on our website. Martin, thanks so much for calling in with that question there.
Thanks for the show.
Let's stay with the phone lines. Diane in the university area where we are right now. Diane, thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks so much for having the show. This is something that my husband and I have been looking for probably the last 6 months. And I guess you've probably answered all my questions. I was just trying to figure out how to get connected, because we go to local grocery stores and we want to support our local farmers, and we know that they get them from the farmers, and we were just trying to figure out how to tap in. So I feel that this is wonderful, and I also just wanted to make a comment that I feel like our society, we are so we're such a convenience-based society, and we are so disappointed when things don't happen right away and when we can't cook things right away. And I think that everything is just kind of broken down to just convenience, and that's kind of why I feel like people's health has kind of deteriorated and gone to the wayside. My husband is diabetic, and we are trying to get him not to have diabetes. And so we feel that a lot of this is eating organic and just cutting out fast food and everything, I guess, that's convenience-based. And I think it comes down to discipline. We really
okay.
need to discipline ourselves.
Sounds
and
good.
Our children as well.
All right, Diane. Christy wants to respond.
Absolutely, Diane. I mean, that's so important. You know, the foods that he's eating is going to make a difference in helping to start to reverse the diabetes. And you talk about convenience, and it's almost like this false sense of convenience, because the reality is it doesn't take much longer for us to be cooking our foods.
Mm.
You know, we ripped out our microwave about 2 years ago, and nothing takes me any longer to do on the stovetop. It just is
I only
easy.
Laugh because we just did that. We totally
Excellent.
Were like, we're not going to do the microwave anymore, just because we started reading just a book called The Gershon Way, which is
mm-hmm.
healing.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
it's basically,
Great.
Have you heard of her?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah, he's shaking his head, yes.
That's kind of what we're trying to do, is just go organic vegetables for now and just try to reverse it, because he's stage two. So, and I know it's possible.
Yeah.
But I feel like the more we play a role in this convenience-based society, the more I see my daughter just grow up and just like, well, why can't we have it now? Why can't
yeah.
we eat this? Why
great.
Can't? I'm
great.
Like, gosh, dang it. So
yes, lead by example. It's wonderful.
Wonderful.
That's
thanks,
right.
Diane.
So thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Christy, you wanted
to
add
something? Yeah, I just wanted to add something really quickly here, and that's that we're in a transition period as well. North Carolina, in terms of organic production, is pretty far down there in terms of the other states, and we don't have as much organic acreage, although there are pushes to bring that up. And I feel like at this point, I also agree that I want organically produced things, but there are a lot of reasons why the farms in this area are not all certified organic, and this is why knowing your farms is really important. And so when we talk about going to farmers markets, it's not just about asking, is this organic? It's about asking, what do you do to keep your soil fertile? What do you do to manage pests? What do you feel about organic practices? It is really critical that you ask questions of your farmers. There are only 3 farmers markets in the Charlotte area that actually restrict the farmers to sell food that they have grown. Those are the Davidson, the Matthews, and the Charlotte Tailgate Market on the south end. And at the other markets, there are local farmers, but you really have to ask, did you grow this particular thing that I'm holding in my hand, and how did you grow this particular thing?
And ask in the restaurants. When you ask your servers or your managers where the food's coming from, and that will help them to know that there's a desire to eat locally.
Yeah. I do want to put a plug in for some of these farmers markets and some of the CSAs that supply not only to the individual customers, but they're supplying to many of the local restaurants in Charlotte.
Absolutely.
Barrington being one of them, Sante in downtown Matthews, Sammy Koenigsberg, his Newtown Farms, an organic farm out in the Waxhaw area, supplying to restaurants like that. Other CSA farms are supplying to restaurants all over the place.
I dropped off a case of zucchini and a case of Swiss chard to Gianni's on my way here in downtown Concord. So, yes, they're buying local, and we appreciate their support.
And they also love the fact that they're able to put that on the menu.
Yeah, definitely. It's great. I just wanted to touch on, I'm glad that Christy brought up the mention about organic, because oftentimes patients are thinking they need to move towards organic, which is true. But the thing that I stress first is local. Because local is going to be giving you more nutritious food above and beyond organic.
Define organic for me, please.
Organic foods are grown without pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, antibiotics, or hormones.
And with, so they're grown with those, but they're certified organic.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are using pesticides. They're using organic, certified pesticides. So I just want to make sure
insecticidal control of pests, yeah. things that don't involve synthetic chemicals right. or yeah. fertilizers.
Rodinone and as opposed to seven dust, for example. Good example?
Yeah, yeah, neem oil instead of seven dust.
But that then brings up the question, when you're talking to an organic farmer and you're talking to a farmer who's not certified organic, okay, this farmer over here who's organic may have been spraying his foods with things that are organic-based pesticides, and this other farmer may have just simply planted sufficient flowers around the edge of his fields mm-hmm. to bring in the beneficial insects that are necessary to maintain.
There's one last thing I need to cover with Aaron very, very quickly. From A Nation of Farmers, the book you co-wrote with Sharon Astick, you are arguing in this book that part of the world hunger problem is actually being caused by what we're growing. How so? How do you make that connection?
Well, if you look at world hunger, we grow right now roughly twice as much food as is needed to feed everyone on the planet, which is something that most people don't realize. So hunger, world hunger right now, and 24,000 people will die today from starvation or starvation-related illnesses, it's about distribution. So that's why we suggest more farmers, because you simultaneously address the issues of production and distribution at the same time by having more people growing more food.
Because as the United Nations World Health Organization just pointed out, about 1 billion people on the planet at this moment are hungry and have no idea where their next meal is coming from.
12% of the population of the U.S. as well.
Aaron Newton co-authored the book A Nation of Farmers and is on an incubator farm up in Cabarrus County. Aaron, good to see you. Good
Thank
luck you
for
to
having
you.
Me.
Christy Shy runs what's called Know Your Farms, a local food club right there in Davidson and in Mecklenburg County. Christy, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dr. Michael Smith, naturopathic physician with the Carolinas Natural Health Center. Dr. Smith, nice to see you.
Great.
Thanks for
thanks.
Being here. I'm Chris Clackham. You've been listening to Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.